Hello, listeners. This is Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM and ExcellentCultures.com. I'm your host, Zach Gandra, and with me, as always, the inimitable Steve Gandra. How are you, Steve?
I'm glad that you only call me inevitable and not immutable and inevitable on this show.
I think you're mixing words there.
Yeah, I am. I'm bad about that.
You've been hustling and bustling all day. Anything good news you want to share with everybody?
A lot of good things going on. Able to help lots of businesses, both in the local Seattle area, improve their leadership and culture, as well as doing a lot of interaction and communication back east with the Subway organization, largest food franchise in the world, and then out in LA with Toyota, the largest auto company in the world. So, you know, really busy making the gambit from small businesses and startups to mid-market companies to the really big guys. So life is exciting at Excellent Cultures.
Yeah, and we have, if you missed our last workshop, at least locally in the Seattle area, actually people have been flying in from all over, but we have one coming up October 21st and 22nd. Anything special details about that
Just that we can only accommodate about 45 folks, and the last at 45
We've already
leaders.
Got almost 30 yeah. signed in. Yes. Up, so
we're getting close to capacity, so... Yep. If you're looking to really make a positive impact in your culture and improve performance, now's the time to visit us and get into that workshop. ExcellentCultures.com/events/events.
And you can get that information right there. You can also register right there. It's fabulous. We're trying to make it as easy for you as possible. All right. We have a special guest today. We have a college professor with us, eh?
Well, she's more than a college professor. She is, as far as I'm concerned, she's the college professor when it comes to leadership.
The college professor.
Yeah, Marilyn Guest, you know, you'll see when you check her out online. She's not just an MBA and a PhD, but she is, in my opinion, the most insightful expert on the subject of real leadership that works and is sustained. She actually leads the leadership graduate programs here at Seattle University here in the Seattle area. And she's got a philosophy of leadership that is tried and tested that integrates values and principles in a manner that creates phenomenal results for so many of the graduate candidates that she works with and is able to, through her process, instill culture values and sustainability into the process of these brilliant folks that are, you know, getting their postgraduate degrees in leadership at Seattle University. You know, if she's not on the map yet for one of the finest, if not the finest program in the country, she will be soon.
She will be soon. All right. Well, welcome to the show, Marilyn.
Hi, Marilyn.
Hi there. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, when I first had coffee with you that day and heard you share your philosophy on how you hogtie these brilliant leaders who are getting their graduate degrees into the process of helping them assimilate, you know, values and ethics and deep, long, you know, lifelong principles that will serve them and their organizations forever, into the process, and they go in kicking and screaming and come out thanking you and being a lifetime friend. You know, I knew that for sure you were someone we wanted to have on the show.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, my role is and has been fairly broad, and it's given me quite a bit of insight into what I'm doing. I have actually been associate dean at Seattle U, and I'm grounded in the Albert School for Business and Economics. But part of my role in the past has been to oversee all of our graduate programs. We have several versions of the MBA, depending on where people are in their career. It starts with the Bridge program for those who are relatively fresh out of undergraduate with little work experience and no grounding in business. And moves into our professional MBA program, which is more traditional, part-time program geared towards students who have some work experience. We also have a Master of Professional Accounting, a Master of Finance, and a brand new Master of Science in Business Analytics starting up for next fall.
Wow.
And about a dozen certificates. all of these are open to graduate students. The certificates are open to non-students as well. But everything we do reflects our Jesuit mission and values, which includes educating the whole person, not just the intellect, but values, emotions, you know, their deeper sense of self, as well as professional formation, and specifically developing leaders for a just and humane world, which I think is part of what you may have keyed into as I was talking.
Well, I keyed into just about everything you shared, and then again, just the way that you've been able to develop these, you know, graduate programs for business leaders and for leaders in general that impacts the, you know, their whole being, which is right in line with every bit of research that we see coming out today on, you know, the difference between excellent leaders and mediocre ones. Is the word deep, and you get it, and your program is doing it. And folks, if you're interested in learning how to become an excellent leader and getting a postgraduate degree, you want to make sure you visit the website and check out Maryland's programs, because they are the state of the art.
Well, for the last dozen years, I've also led our executive programs, as you talk about leaders specifically, and we have both degree and certificate programs there, but our executive MBA program is unique nationally in that it includes both the traditional business core, which would embrace topics like finance and accounting and marketing and strategy, economics. But the program also includes a formative development component in leadership. It rests on two quarters of our executive leadership program that really features a very individualized form of development, and it includes classwork, but it's also very experiential. And part of the experiential emphasis, I think I draw on a quote by Kolbenbach, one of the Jesuits, who said that, you know, when the heart is touched by direct experience, the mind can be challenged to change. And since we're really working with a holistic focus, it's very important for our students to have that direct experience. And they get that in teamwork, in business projects, community activity. But there's also a lot of self-reflection and discernment about their values and their ethics, so that ultimately they're challenged to really define themselves as leaders rather than getting caught up in the job's demands. We've been ranked for 6 years now in the top 20 to 25 by U.S. News and World Reports, and we're serving a pretty broad range of companies and industries in terms of student audience, which is mid to senior managers for those programs. So hopefully doing some good.
Well, the thing one of the things that impressed me most about your philosophy of developing leaders, for lack of a better way to describe it, was when you talked about how, you know, what the fruit of the work is, where you have graduate, you know, students coming in or executives coming in thinking that, okay, they're just going to be able to study the material, take the tests, and come out with a postgrad degree. But in the meantime, you kind of, my words, not yours, you hogtie them into this, you know, deeper learning experience that affects their whole being, that they kind of go into a little bit reluctantly, but that could then come out being friends of you and friends of the program for life. Could you talk a little bit about, you know, what that philosophy is and how you do that, and how you've had, you know, so many, many business leaders that you've developed over the years who have been impacted, you know, in the deeper part of their life that actually positively affects how they lead, how they do business, and their success in their careers?
Well, I think it is most common that when people have been through years of education, their focus has been primarily intellectual. It's classroom lectures, some papers, some projects. The focus really is on kind of intellectual learning, being able to embrace concepts and principles and talk about how those are applying mental models, that sort of stuff. And so when students come to us, when they enroll in our program, that's what they are expecting out of higher education. And we give them that, no doubt. But what they often are not expecting is what I described earlier as the more experiential component. So we're structuring processes and activities for them that really put them on the edge, so to speak, push the envelope a bit for them, have them embrace challenges and issues that are there in the business community and society at large, and really begin to grapple with those, with, you know, how are we going to try to resolve some of this? And in the process, they often find that their views of what was going on was somewhat distorted. Maybe they see people differently. They see societal issues differently. They come to understand the larger need of the commons and how businesses in particular can have a positive or negative effect on it. So we have students who, you know, leave the program having really reframed not only what their role is, but how they can have a very positive impact. And they often go out and they do that.
Well, obviously, the reality of what you're accomplishing is in the fruit of what's taking place, and you know, for that, gosh, what better way to educate leaders?
We got to go into our first break, but we'll be right back after these messages. You're listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM and ExcellentCultures.com. How do we say her last name?
Gist, G-I-S-T.
Gist.
Gist.
Gist. Okay. We're back, everybody. This is Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM and ExcellentCultures.com, and we have our guest with us, Marilyn Gist, Associate Dean and Professor of Management at Seattle University.
So before the break, Dr. Gist was sharing with us her perspective on how they educate the whole leader in her business leadership programs at Seattle University, or postgrad business leadership programs at Seattle University. And as we know, we learn every day at Excellent Cultures, I was actually meeting with a CEO this morning who, through our data instruments that look to identify what some of the deeper things are that are holding a business back or holding a leader back, it sounds like, you know, that are the below the surface things, not the things that are readily apparent. It sounds like, Marilyn, what you're describing to us that your programs focus on is helping leaders self-discover these deeper issues, deeper things that are going on, you know, early in the development of their careers, or I guess it could be later if you have an executive that's, you know, taking advantage of one of your programs later on down the road, but that end up really making a positive difference and not just how they lead or how successful their businesses are, but their whole humanity. Is that a good way to describe it?
I would say so. I think that there are multiple components to what you're describing, but one of them that comes to mind as you're speaking is that it's not uncommon for us to have leaders who are not very self-aware. And many of those who are not self-aware believe they actually are self-aware, but they often have blind spots, and they can be quite significant. And one of the things that happens as people move into leadership is they gain power, and so people below them or even peers are often reluctant to point out blind spots. And so, you know, people nod and go along, but they're still observing what can be fairly significant problems in how the leader behaves. The leader, for example, can be using power very carelessly. They could be getting caught up in their own personal agenda, personal gain, looking for advancement or perks or just sort of enjoying being part of a social clique of other people who have high status and power. And they may not notice that others are feeling left out or are objecting to the way in which they are isolating themselves. You know, Pope Francis, back in December, was speaking to the Roman Curia, the leadership group for the church, and he was talking to them about, you know, how they are a leadership group. But he took that opportunity to also say that he had observed that there are certain diseases of leadership, and he termed them diseases of leadership, and I kind of liked that notion. And he outlined 15 of them, and I certainly don't recall all of them offhand, but, you know, he included things like thinking we are indispensable when we're not, excessive busyness so that we're neglecting the needs and requests from those who work with us, having a heart of stone, you know, poor coordination with others, rivalry, vanity, leading a double life, you know, people who espouse one thing but do another, you know, closed circles, you know, extravagance and self-exhibition, which, of course, we've seen this particular pope avoid. But, you know, they are examples of things that he saw in that leadership group that I would say we also see in other organizations.
Wow, don't we?
Yeah. And this reflects a lack of self-awareness, going back to my earlier comment. And when you have that and you basically become shielded from the observations and perhaps criticisms of those below, you know, it's not hard to slip over a line into some shady dealings in order to make a profit, doing things that could have a negative impact on the community or the environment. So I think, you know, it's really important for leaders in any organization to really have that self-awareness and to not assume that we always have it, to keep ourselves open to getting that input from other people. And sometimes that means that we, you know, we have to hear things we wouldn't otherwise enjoy hearing.
Can you think of, just listening to this, perspective on how a leader of a spiritual body observes leadership tendencies, diseases, as he called them and you called them, you know, in the hierarchy of, you know, the Roman Catholic Church, and speaks to them in such a way that they generically affect anyone who's in leadership leading anywhere. Can you think of any particular examples or maybe things that tips that you give to your students or best practices that you teach your graduate candidates in terms of how do we improve the level of self-awareness so that these diseases don't rise up and grab us by the throat before we know they're even happening?
So I think there are a couple of ways. We have used, and many other organizations use, a form of leader assessment that involves a 360 instrument so that leaders can get feedback from below as well as from their peers on how they're doing on a number of dimensions and not simply rely on the person above to see, you know, to give that feedback. There are less formal ways that leaders can use. I think one of those, in my view, involves respect for human dignity, just recognizing that each and every person needs a sense of self-worth and being always mindful of the interaction you have with other people and whether it is supporting and enhancing their dignity as opposed to behaving in ways that could harm it. And I think as leaders become increasingly mindful of the dignity of others, they become less arrogant, they become more open to feedback and criticism because, you know, if I'm leading and another person finds my behavior to be wrong on something or offensive in some way, and they drop a hint or they come to tell me about it, if I shut that conversation down, they'll never come back and give me feedback again. So I think if I'm mindful of that dignity of the other person, even if I think they're wrong, I'll be open to hearing what they have to say. And so part of what we embrace in the philosophy of our programs is helping people reflect, helping them seek feedback from others that includes, you know, what could I be doing better? How can I help you? How can I serve you better if you're working for me or you're a peer group? So those would be examples of some of the less formal ways, the more formal way being a 360. But I think even if you get the negative feedback on a 360 that you might need, as well as positive feedback, it's helpful to have the informal so you know how to do it.
Yeah, that's very well said. So Marilyn, share with us, what's your vision, and you know, what vision do you attempt to impart to your post-grad candidates of a culture of ethics, values, and employee engagement? So much has been said about employee engagement in these last few years with the recent Gallup poll. I mean, what's your vision? What is a culture of ethics, of values, a culture of ethics, values, and employee engagement look like?
Well, I think it has to begin with meaningful work and employees who feel connected to that work. They see it as serving some larger common good. A lot of times organizations have a mission statement, a vision statement. It's, you know, posted on the wall as you walk into a building. But if you were to ask many people there what the mission, vision, values are, they couldn't tell you. And I think that's a sign that people don't feel engaged. They feel that's just superficial talk. When you walk into an organization and people can tell you what they're about, what they're trying to do, the quality with which you're trying to do it, then you have a sense that, yes, there is some larger common good and people feel connected to it. So when you have, I think it has to start there. When you have that, people tend to feel engaged, and assuming the leadership is also humane, meaning caring about human dignity, then I think the employees feel valued. You'll see that represented in things like fair reward systems, low turnover rate. You know, the strongest predictor of turnover, of course, is dissatisfaction with supervisor. And most of the time, that comes down to a lack of respect for human dignity. But employees, when there is a strong culture, an excellent culture, as you call it, are going to give it their all, and they enjoy being there. They enjoy collaborating with others.
We got to take a break, guys. Our second break. We'll be right back with Marilyn Gist of Seattle University in just a few minutes. You're listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM and ExcellentCultures.com. And we're back. You're listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM and ExcellentCultures.com. We are talking with Marilyn Gist of Seattle University, and we've been talking everything from leadership to culture to human dignity to Marilyn's idea of ideal culture, which I thought was beautiful, with meaning people connecting meaningfully with their work, as well as a connection to them. Like, that's a huge thing. Like, a mission statement doesn't do it.
Yeah. So Marilyn, every successful business, any business that's been around for a while, has a cool mission statement and values, even if they were written by the marketing department and don't mean anything to the people that are involved. And I think any reasonable leader that at least we've ever had in our 30 plus years of helping leaders maximize their effectiveness as leaders and improve their cultures and the performance of their businesses, you know, every reasonable leader wants to live the mission and the values, but not that many do. In fact, I would say there's probably more that don't than do. What are some of the trouble signs that you see where maybe a well-meaning leader or a group of well-meaning leaders or a whole organization can get off track or the, you know, the trouble signs that they should start to watch for to help them recognize that they're getting off track?
So I think this gets back to some of the deeper work we began talking about. A lot of students, and we see this a lot in students, a lot of people who are successful gotten there because they're motivated to achieve. And getting a promotion when you're young and then another promotion and the growth in titles and maybe income and perks that goes with it can be a very heady thing. Many people in leadership are driven to achieve, and, you know, that's fine. But somewhere around mid-career, I think achievement for its own sake begins to lose some of the meaning that it might have had when, you know, we were relatively young and fresh out of the gate. And at that point, people often tend to start going through the motions. I have executive students who come in who say, you know, I've lost some of the passion for my work, or I'm not sure I've, you know, fully align anymore with what the organization is asking me to do, or, you know, I don't really know how much longer I want to work. I'd retire tomorrow if I could. And these are people who are, you know, 10, 15, 20 years from retirement possibilities. And I think it's sad when people feel that way. And those are signs of people who are at risk of kind of going through the motions of the job without feeling a deep connection to how they're leading, what they're leading, what they're doing. So part of what is important is a period of reflection and discern that phase to really understand. Our university president, Father Sundborg, would define this in terms of aligning the I with the it, you know, the who am I piece. What is it that I believe and who I am in my deepest core that matches well with what the expectations are of the job? Because the expectations can be very broad-ranging, and each leader in that role can bring a different slant or spin to it. So it's very important for people to identify that alignment. When they do, it energizes them as they get up in the morning and they go into work, because they know what it is that they personally can contribute to that role. So that's an opportunity then for them to bring that same inspiration to other people who are working for them and create the strong culture and the engagement that we were talking about. In the absence of that, others begin to sense that they are just going through the motion, and that's not very inspirational. So you start to get employees who feel disengaged, and then the whole system starts to spiral down.
Yeah, that's a great way to describe it. So this know thyself piece, or the who am I in my deepest being, and how does that connect with the larger organizational mission? Is there a best practice, or are there tools or assessments or things that you encourage and recommend that leaders use to help discover that for themselves? Or is it just a process that everybody kind of goes through on their own in a non-scientific way and finally gets to the, you know, the point where they know the who am I and, you know, what's my purpose and how does that connect with a large organization? How do you teach people how to do this?
Certainly there are people who find their way on their own. I would say that's the hard way to do it. It'd be kind of like, you know, my trying to drive three states over without a map. Maybe I'll get there. Maybe I'll take three times as long. Maybe I'll get lost along the way. If it were simple to do on our own, we'd have more excellent leaders. I think it can be taught, and it involves a process and one that couples the reflective component I described with direct experience, so that as people work in their organizations and they attempt new projects or new activities, they're able to pause and go through a structured process of looking at not just what were the results, because that's our common focus, but how did that feel? How were others engaged in it? What were some signs that maybe I left some other people behind in the process, or I didn't get as far as I could have because I really wasn't communicating as well. So there is the reflective component coupled with direct experience that's really essential to this, and it needs to take place over a period of time. It's very hard to do this, you know, as a quick fix. You know, here's three principles or practices, go do them, and you'll be there.
So when you're leading someone through this process, if we were describing it to them on the front end, what would we tell them that the period of time would look like and what they might be asked to do in during the period of time to get to that level of what you call self-awareness that ultimately will help, you know, connect the dots between the who am I, what's my purpose, and how does that fit within the larger organization, Marilyn?
Well, we get feedback from the students in our executive leadership program that it has been transformative for them. They often use the words life-changing. That's not our word. It's not necessarily our intent when they come in. But they feel it has been transformative in a very positive way, and that's in a period of 7 to 8 months, typically fall and winter quarters. And we see that kind of change where they have a far deeper understanding of self, of others around them, and their identity as a leader and how they can affect change in the organization or in society. We, you know, in terms of the how we do that, again, it's very experientially based. There are business projects. There are community activities that they're asked to participate in, reflective exercises all along the way. And typically you start to see the eye opening maybe around the second or third month for some, probably around the midpoint for most. And then, you know, some perhaps even a little later on. But in all cases, they have almost an awakening to their own power, both personally as well as in their role as a leader. And as they come into that, they recognize that, you know, they're not as limited as they thought they were. They can really create cultures that are excellent. They can create change in the organization where there might have been some rough spots. And they step out and they really begin to be much more effective and impactful.
So what I hear you saying is that it's not a one-time event or a quick fix. It's a process that it usually
Correct.
Takes about 6 to 8 months, and your candidates, for lack of a better way to describe this, the post-grad students who are participating, start to see and self-discover these changes about 2 to 3 months in, and that it is very experiential in nature as opposed to intellectual. Is that a better way to describe it, or a
Correct.
Good way to describe it? Okay. Okay. So
Correct.
So, folks, if you're looking for a quick fix, if you're looking for a quick fix to employee engagement and leadership effectiveness, you know, you
and
have
stay up late and watch the infomercial that you see at 2 a.m. on
TV. Yeah, and buy the infomercial stuff, but don't expect the kind of results that Marilyn is telling us.
You've
about.
Got a number of those ab machines that I think. You
yeah,
buy
I know.
Here,
I've
Steve.
Got. I've bought. I've invested in the Ab Master, the Ab Blaster, the Ab Dominator. You know, and I still
you should have just bought in a kegger, invested in a kegerator.
Yeah,
that'd have been the way.
You know,
to go.
and still fight the jelly roll. You know, still fight the jelly roll.
It doesn't
roll.
Happen fast.
Yeah, but Marilyn, this is just so, you know, very, very enlightening. When we look at, you know, lately we've had the Gallup organization use their expertise in gathering data and awakening America, so to speak, tell us in the last two reports, which are like every 2 years in October, that American workers, 70%+ of our American workforce is disengaged. And the last one told us that 18% actually told the Confidential poll that they hated their jobs. And the most common reason for hating their jobs was they hated their bosses. And then Jim Clifton, the CEO of the Gallup organization, in his cover memo writes that, you know, he labels these hate, you know, bosses that are hated the new generation of managers from hell. We're interested in hearing what you feel the connection is between, you know, corporate ethics and values and employee engagement.
We got to do that after the break, though. This is our last break,
last
I promise.
Break. Okay.
Last break. You are listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM and excellentcultures.com. Send us an email, asktheexperts@excellentcultures.com. We'll be right back. You want to do the intro, Steve?
Sure.
Hold on a sec.
We're back with Excellent Cultures and Business Culture Matters on Clay 1180. We're talking today with Dr. Marilyn Gist from the Seattle University Business Leadership Development Program. I just hate to call it anything less than what it is, because as Marilyn has described it to us earlier in the show, this is a huge, huge undertaking that affects any business leader of literally multiple disciplines that participate in the post-grad programs at Seattle University. And if you are wondering, you're just joining the show, you want to make sure to listen to the podcast and go back to the early version or the earlier part of the show, because Marilyn spelled all that out for us. But before the break, we addressed a question and asked her to comment on what she felt the connection was between cultures of corporate ethics and values and this large disparity of employee engagement, the 70%+ of disengaged employees that the recent Gallup poll is telling us we have now in our country. Marilyn, what are your thoughts along those lines?
So my thought is that we've lost our way, obviously. Work is a significant part of most people's lives. We're going to work many hours a week for many, many years, decades. And to be in a situation where 70%+ of people feel disengaged from their work is very troublesome to me. I think that there, you know, are ways in which businesses as a whole in what they're trying to accomplish has lost their way, but there's also a younger generation of employees who are especially concerned about what's going on. They saw the impact of the last financial crisis on their parents. Many of their parents lost jobs, lost homes, and that certainly was disheartening to them, because in some cases their parents had, you know, worked for organizations for many years or decades themselves. The young generation itself also saw the impact of that meltdown on their own ability to get jobs as they were coming out of college or trying to begin their own careers. And some of them, in reaction to, you know, the past 4 or 5 years of frustration, have, you know, just sort of disengaged and said, well, you know, I can't get in and get traction, so why bother? But this group also grew up with a lot of advertising and spin, so they are both more observant and perhaps more skeptical than those ahead of them who didn't grow up with quite as much of that. But basically, they do not want careers that fail to offer meaning to them, and that embraces a number of factors. It means, what contribution is the business making to the common good in this world? Will the job and the career provide some balance in life so that they can have a life outside of work? You know, many older employees feel some of these same things after the recession, but I think when you look at that number of 70%+ and millennials have entered the workforce and are the largest generation now, as boomers are retiring, you're getting a mix of both of those groups. But still, you know, we have to acknowledge that the younger set has a different set of values and is not happy with what they're seeing in a lot of companies.
So is there anything that we can do about it? Or do we just say, que sera, that's the way millennials are, it's their experience, and we deal with it?
Well, I think it gets back to the excellent culture idea, beginning with how are we engaging them? How can we as leaders help them tie into the value that we're actually adding through our business to the larger common good? And if the leader doesn't feel connected to that, the employees aren't going to feel connected. There also are some practical things that I see in some companies, particularly large publicly traded companies. I think it takes a certain amount of courage to stand up to Wall Street, but the heavy emphasis on quarterly profits has led some companies down a path, I think, of, you know, quarterly profit gain at all cost, and, you know, let's not worry about the employees as much, or let's just do whatever we can to beat out the competition and win. And often that involves sort of tipping the scales a bit in terms of both the meaning of the work, the way we treat people, whether there is balance at all for employees or concern for their dignity. So I think, especially in large companies, we really need to ask whether the values we espouse, and most companies will tell you our employees are our most important asset. There are very few places that don't espouse some version of that. But do they walk that talk, or are employees going through the hall saying, yeah, that's just talk. That's not how they really treat us. So I think you know, we've got to go back to really realizing that, you know, to get the work done, we have to work together. It's not something that leadership by itself can do. And if you want employees to be engaged, you have to create a climate in which they feel valued, they have a voice, there is transparency, there is respect for dignity, and there is work that serves a larger common good.
Wow, those are some huge bullets. So what I hear you saying is that, again, it's not a quick fix, but the real answer, in your opinion, is leaders who recognize the deeper, most important, long-term things in business and in life and in their careers, and who have enough character and chutzpah, for lack of a better way to describe it, to stand up to Wall Street or to stand up to higher management. And identify that, well, maybe our quarterlies aren't as good this month as we would like them to be, but it's because we're investing in this longer term outcome that is in fact going to produce more fruit later, and be persuasive enough to be able to sell that to shareholders if in fact the short term numbers aren't being hit, and do it in a manner that effectively ultimately produces the long-term gain that, you know, every shareholder is looking for. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yes, it is. And there are examples of CEOs of large companies who have done just that, who have said, yeah, I hear you, and if we trimmed this or trimmed that in terms of employee benefits or how we invest energy in employees, we would be even more profitable. But you know what? That's short-term thinking, and in the long run, it's not who we are or how we're going to do business. And in the long run, we'll survive and do better than most because of how we're going to do it. So I think it takes courage to do it, but it can be done. I personally believe it should be done. And, you know, we develop leaders who have the moral courage as well as the insight to make decisions on things like that that really serve a larger good.
So as we're winding down to the end of the show, Marilyn, can you put your coach's hat on and tell our listeners who are leaders from middle managers to CEOs, what are the two or three tight, pithy things that they can be doing as leaders in this season with this generation of workforce that will, in effect, in your opinion, based on all of the research you've gathered and all the experience you've had developing senior leaders over the years, that will really, really make a difference for the good of everyone involved?
So I think first and foremost is the self-awareness piece, and to be brutally honest with ourselves on how do we interact with others? What is the emotional wake of our behavior? The interactions we have an impact on people. Are we having a positive, a neutral, or a negative impact all day, every day? You know, I probably ask myself that question a dozen times a day, certainly a dozen times a week, if not more often. So I think we all ought to be doing that. The second related piece to that is to keep in mind the essential need of human dignity. Leaders rely on followers. If there are no followers, we're not really leading. We're having a monologue. And I think to gain followers, we really want to get their hearts and minds, not just their compliance. And in order to do that, we have to enhance and support their dignity. And we do that through helping them see the value of their work and how it makes a contribution to the larger good. And that makes all of us feel, wow, you know, what I'm doing is important. I'd like to keep doing it. I feel rewarded by doing that because most people do want to contribute to a larger good. As well as, you know, the respect, which is, we talk about that a lot, but I think there are a lot of ways in which we fail to offer it. You know, listening to people who have objection, criticism, differing ideas, you know, being transparent so that they can feel that they trust us. So, you know, all of those things that are essential to make people feel that their dignity matters.
What a wonderful way to say it. Folks, you're listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM and excellentcultures.com. If you didn't hear the beginning of the show where Marilyn spells out all of the programs that she's involved in with respect to developing leaders at Seattle University, make sure you hear this because the podcast does a wonderful job of list, you know, providing the opportunity to hear the whole message that she shared with us today, and it's been a great one. Marilyn, thank you for being on the show. Your contributions have been phenomenal.
Thank you so much, Steve. I appreciate your having me.
Stay on the line, Marilyn. We'll be right back with you. Hey guys, if you have a question for us or while you're listening or thinking, hey, I need to connect with these guys, I need to have a conversation about this with my company, you can get a hold of us at asktheexperts@excellentcultures.com, or you can just go right away to excellentcultures.com right now, hit contact and get a hold of us right there. There's also an assessment that you can do on our profile right now. Just go to excellentcultures.com, check it out. We'd love to have a conversation with you and help you to have an excellent culture. You're listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM and excellentcultures.com. Signing off.